So here we are. This is it. The very first episode of Slackerwood, the podcast.
Woohoo!
Yeah, no intro music, no fancy editing or anything like that here. Just lo-fi, slackery goodness. Jet, where'd the term Slackerwood come from?
Oh, well, this was actually, I came up with the term when I was writing for Cinematical, and we wanted to write a column about Austin, and the ideas we were coming up with were terribly lame. We wanted a column title that nobody else had, and people kept saying Third Coast, and I'm like, well, you know, that could also be every Chicago. Hollywood of the South, well, everybody's calling themselves Hollywood of the South, and I said, well, it's like Hollywood, but for slackers. So it should be Slackerwood.
So you actually originated the term.
I came up with this term. If you go up on, if you look for it on Google, there is no Slackerwood that is not me.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I would have to say that initially I suspected it came from somewhere else, but no, that's cool. So I'm Chris Holland, recent transplant to Austin. Sitting next to me is Juliet Kernion, also known as Jet. Where'd that come from? The whole Jet thing. Is that a family name?
No, it came from when I first started writing online, 10 years ago. 10 years ago I started writing online. And, at the time people were all paranoid and wanted to use their real name. And so I just sort of chopped the middle out of my name, and that was what came out.
Cool. And we're here to talk about Austin and movies and everything in between. But
yeah.
Mostly Austin and movies.
Sure.
So, you've been here, I've said this already, but you've been here a lot longer than I have. I've been here about 3 years. You've been here 15 or more?
I moved here in 1991 to go to University of Texas to study film production and then screenwriting when film production was proven to be too hard for me. and then, I realized I like writing and talking about movies more than making them or writing them. So that's why we're here.
That's worked out pretty well for you. I mean,
yeah.
Cinematical, that's no mean feat.
No, it's a lot of fun.
Cool. So, we could probably spend a lot of time talking about Austin then versus now. But I think we'll get into that later. What makes Austin a cool movie town now?
A lot of things. You can see, if you compare it to other towns, you can see all kinds of stuff here. I'm being clean. I'm saying stuff.
Stuff.
Now. You can see all kinds.
You think
we're
going to try and keep it clean here?
You can see all kinds of weird shit here. I'm sorry.
No. We're going straight for the explicit.
And a lot of, you have, on one hand, you have somewhere like the Paramount that's doing their summer film classic series where you always know you'll get to see Casablanca, Breakfast at Tiffany's, and Gone with the Wind. And on the other hand, you have Alamo Drafthouse where you never quite know what you're going to see. And they do all kinds of crazy events and movies from all around the world and things that nobody's seen but Tim and Lars and us.
It would be really easy for this to become the Alamo show, I think.
It would, and I don't want it to be. We love the Alamo. We don't want it to be the Alamo show. I mean, I love going to Paramount. I like the movies I see at the Dolby. I like the movies I see at the Armor. And we go to Galaxy Highland a lot. I mean, we're all over the map.
You actually get out to the Cineplex every once in a while.
We get, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I like watching movies. Of course, again, this is Alamo's the big perpetrator here, but I like the movies we get to see outside.
Yeah. Well, I think, the Alamo certainly is doing the most adventurous programming. But that's one thing I've noticed about Austin is that, though I personally am pretty spoiled and don't see much outside of the Alamo or the Paramount, people go to the movies. I mean, even the Cineplex is packed on a Saturday night.
Oh, sure. Even, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff where we've gone on a weekend night and we can't believe, we thought we went because we thought nobody would be there and we were wrong.
People in this town just love going to the movies. And that's, in these days where Cineplex numbers seem to be down and people going to the movies is not, famously is something that doesn't happen that much anymore, or at least that seems to be the trend. Austin seems to defy that trend, both at the specialty theaters and the non-specialty theaters.
And at non-theaters, one of the things I like to talk about is that you can see movies in the damnedest places here. I just got an email from Bookwoman doing a screening this month. The university is always screening something somewhere. Amy's Ice Cream. We were there the other day, and they have a list of films they're showing. Pizza places. Austin Java. Yeah, especially during the summer, you can, you know, Spider House used to. I don't know if they still do. You can see a free movie all over town, and you know, and almost every night, really.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about the university for a second. They have a pretty strong filmmaking program. At least that's my impression, having not actually been to any filmmaking classes there. But I mean, you've got people like John Pearson and who else? Who else is on there?
I think Scott Rice is still teaching there. Am I right? And yeah, I enjoy his movies. Somebody whom I just saw on the Austin Film Festival list, and we're working with a second computer here, so I can.
Well, she's looking that up. You know, I think it's a fairly respected film program, and do those people get out of Austin and go work on movies, or do they stay in Austin and make movies?
Well, both. Ellen Spiro is teaching there, and she did Body of War, the movie with Phil Donahue that came out, and. Mm-hmm. And that was work. They didn't stay in Austin for that. Here we go. Oh, Andrew Shea. I should have known I went into this. Andrew Garrison, who did Third Ward, Texas. I think he's at UT. There's just this long list, and this is just off the top of my head. And they have the UT Film Institute is still going on, even though they're not partnered with Burnt Orange anymore. There's an article in The Statesman from August 6th about some of the things UTFI is doing in town. Yeah.
There's also the Austin Film Society, not to be confused with the Austin Film Festival or the Austin Film, you know, name
Austin
something
Film
else. Austin
Film Everything.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about Austin.
Yeah. So, speaking of film festivals, there's 4 major film festivals in town.
Yes.
That's kind of a big deal.
It is. I mean, think it's great.
Most other major metros, if you're not New York or LA, have like 1, maybe 2 major film festivals. And here we've got South by Southwest, Austin Film Festival, AGLIF, the Austin Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, which is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, gay and lesbian festival in the States, and Fantastic Fest, which is super young, but already just...
What a Variety called the Telluride of
geekdom or something. Yeah, Telluride for geeks. I mean, and you know, that goes back to the whole this isn't the Alamo show thing. But, you know, I think that speaks to sort of the power of both Austin and Tim's programming. Tim League, the owner, founder of the Alamo Draft House, and just his ability to put together awesome programming and awesome events.
Oh, yeah. And Fantastic Fest has always had good programmers along with Tim, too. I know the Twitch guys have done a lot of work on that, and Matt Dentler was doing some work before he left. Traitor, you left for New York. Not that he'd be hearing this. But
yeah, we'll make sure he gets the
The only thing about the 4 major festivals is that 3 of them occur within a month of one another, and if you are writing about film, you get very tired by the end of October.
And this is a crazy town right around September, October.
Yeah.
It's a madhouse. So South By's in
March.
During spring break, which now that my wife works for the Austin School District is kind of a pain because the only time she gets in the spring that we could travel, I have to be here for the festival. But she's actually kind of pleased about that because now she'll get to see some movies. You know, AGLIF is early September. I think they moved to Labor Day.
It used to be early October, I believe, or mid-October.
Well, it actually originally was in May, so I understand.
Well, it's funny you mention this. We have a Dolby film schedule here from 1991, which I intend to scan and post to Soccerwood, and everybody should go look for it. And here we have the 4th annual one in 91 being from in November.
Wow.
So I think that festival's been all over the map.
Yeah. And all over the map of Austin.
Yeah.
I mean, this is at the
Dolby.
And for the last few years, at least, they've been at the Arbor way up north.
Right.
Which is about 0.5 mile from where I live. And now they're at the Ritz. The Alamo Ritz.
I'll be very interested to see how the new time of the year and the new venue does for them. I think it'll be great.
I think it's going to be awesome. I believe they're doing an opening night at the Long Center. I don't know if that's actually happening or not, but I know they were talking about it.
They did one at City Hall a couple years ago, so it doesn't surprise me. They like to be downtown.
Yeah. Well, and the parties have been traditionally downtown.
The parties are all downtown, so why would you want to come up here?
I think it's a good move for them. I feel bad for the Arbor because they've always been very supportive of that festival, but you know, I don't think people like to drive that distance, which is another weird thing about Austin. People do not like to drive from like the south side to the north side of the north side. Like, if you have to drive more than about 15 minutes in this town, people are not going to show up.
This is a movie podcast, not an Austin podcast, so you don't get to hear my rant about commuting to Westlake, for which you should all be really grateful. The Arbor was a great AGLA festival venue. If you could just have picked it up and moved it downtown for that week, it would have been perfect.
Yeah. But so then after that comes Fantastic Fest, which starts September 18th, which somebody's birthday, the 18th of September.
Really? Not mine.
Yeah, I forget whose it was. Anyway, and that goes for a week. That's, you know, that's a marathon right there. I mean, it's all right in the South Lamar Alamo. And, you know, you don't leave. The parties, some of them are off-site, some of them are on-site.
More were on-site last year. It starts to become like camp. I mean, I've heard somebody like Scott Weinberg say South by Southwest is this big camp for film geeks. But
Scott Weinberg, who is
the Fear.net reporter and also now the managing editor at Cinematical. And he writes for 10 other blogs.
He does the Fantastic Feud trivia thing.
He does the Fantastic Feud trivia thing. But see, that's the thing. That takes place at Alamo. It's starting to turn into overnight camp. Next year, I suspect there will be sleeping bags. Because you just sort of live there, and by the end of it, I enjoy eating at Alamo normally, but by the end of Fantastic Fest, I don't want to eat anything there for at least a week. Because I have had too many Alamo shakes and
The fried food and it's the best food in any movie theater pretty much ever.
Yeah.
But after a while you're just like, I stopped feeling like obligated to order food at screenings. Like I always feel bad for the wait staff. I always order a Coke or something, right? But after
Fantastic Fest,
it's like no, thank you. I've eaten enough chicken fingers. So, and then after that comes Austin Film Festival in mid-October.
Yes, that's right.
And that one's dear to my heart because that's basically where I first worked in Austin.
Well, and I was here when they started it, and it was Austin Heart of Film Screenwriters Conference with a film festival kind of tacked on to the end so that they could show a couple of movies at night if you didn't have anywhere to go drinking. And over the years, the film festivals got bigger. It's still a great screenwriters conference.
It's an awesome
screenwriters conference. They also now have a huge film festival attached to it.
Yeah, well, naturally, I think it's awesome because I worked there. But, you know, they are Academy accredited for short films, and they always have a great program. So, you know, I just think the world of that festival.
And founded by women. You knew I had to bring something feminist into this podcast. We could not get through a podcast with me. But, you know, that's not something a lot of film festivals can.
Yeah, so there's some very strong strong feminist vibes going on over that festival. They got some good guests coming up for that. What's his name? The guy who does Mad Men.
Well, let's look because he's Weiner, in here. I'm so embarrassed to say I haven't actually seen Mad Men yet, but Matthew Weiner,
thank you.
Sam Shepard is getting their Distinguished Screenwriter Award.
Sam Shepard is one of those guys who you know his face, but you can never what movies was that guy in?
Everything.
He definitely would be a contender for the Vincent Schiavelli Award for, you know, recognizable faces whose names you can't. Bruce Dern.
Dick
and
Miller.
Oh, there are tons of people who are on that list. Anyway, so Shane Black's coming back this year. John August, who has that hugely popular screenwriting blog.
Yes.
It's going to be a good time.
That's an excellent blog.
It's going to be a good time.
I'm looking at the list right now. It's just, John Lee Hancock, who did Midnight in Garden of Good and Evil. Jake Kasdan is back. I have a great photo of him. I think it is on Slackerwood with Kelly Williams, the
programmer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So it looks great. Oh. think we've got some local people on here. Chris Moss, who did Chalk. All kinds of just excellent lineup of panelists.
So, yeah, fall's pretty busy for film festivals. But let's talk about stuff a little closer in. Like, what are we going to see this coming week? What's going on in town?
Well, I want to tell you about... I suppose I should mention some obscure, locally made independent film that I'm going to see, but I'm not. I'm going to tell you about the Paramount has done the most wonderful double feature. On Wednesday, August 20th, they are doing Test Drive Rides Again and then Blazing Saddles, which is great because Blazing Saddles pulls all this stuff that Test Drive Rides Again turned into cliches. I mean, and you get Marlena Dietrich, and then you get Madeline Kahn doing Marlena Dietrich. So you should all go to this with me, and not on the Tuesday and Thursday when they're showing the movies in the wrong order. You have to go on Wednesday, the 20th, when they're showing Destry Rides Again first. I know it's the same night as the Austin Bloggers meetup. I don't care. You should all come see this with me.
That's at the Paramount?
That's at the Paramount. They do a lot of double features during the summer. Sometimes they're where I only want to see one of the movies, but this one time I want to see both.
That's a summer classic series that really works. I mean, I've seen some other sort of revival theaters that do summer classics, and it's the same stuff over and over again. Even to the point where they get into, like, modern stuff, like Indiana Jones. Or, I mean, like, we all have Indiana Jones at home on DVD.
There's something really wonderful about seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark in a theater with a lot of people. I don't think a theater should show that every year, but once in a while you want to go see...
Yeah, I can see that. I just don't think it's I don't know. When they start showing, I think we're just now at the point where I just want to start seeing 2001 as a classic movie, you know, and any, like Close Encounters and Indiana Jones and E.T., to me those are not classics
yet. Not yet.
Maybe if I was, if I'm young enough to have seen it in the theater
for the
first time.
What about The Wild Bunch? Does that count? 68? Just coming in under
the
wire?
Yeah. I wasn't born at that point, so all that stuff is classic.
But, yeah, the Paramount, I mean, there are some movies the Paramount shows every year, and you're like, oh, look, there's Baraka again.
Yeah.
But people love, I mean, they pack the theater for those, and then...
Yeah, if people show up, you can't really blame the Paramount for showing them.
Yeah.
I absolutely am not going to tell somebody not to make a buck. Absolutely.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Well, the Texas Filmmakers Production Fund panelists will be in town later this month to decide who gets the money. And while they are here, they are going to be present at a retrospective of their movies, which I am pulling up right now, August 20th and 21st at Alamo South.
Okay, so fill me in on this. Who are these Texas Filmmakers Production Fund people?
These are three filmmakers. Don't think they're actually... They come in from out of town. We have Sean Baker, who's in Take Out, or who co-directed Take Out. Cheryl Dunier. I'm pronouncing these names totally wrong. This is the problem with podcasts. Suddenly you have to pronounce the names. Who they're screening The Watermelon Woman, and Juan Carlos Zaldivar, and 90 Miles. These are all on the Austin Film Society site. These screenings are all free. And filmmakers will be there and, you know, hey, free.
Cool.
And movies we would not normally get to see.
All right.
So what are you going to see later this week?
Well, you know, we talked about not turning this into the Alamo show and then promptly mentioned two things that the Alamo didn't program. So I figure maybe we should mention some classic Alamo programming, and that's Weird Wednesday.
Ooh.
You know, before my daughter was born, I was at pretty much every Weird Wednesday I could, like, manage to get myself to physically. That's fallen off a lot, but I don't think that I can miss this one, The Apple, which is this classic, cheesy, 80s, overblown, messed up musical about Adam and Eve, basically. I don't think I'm going to go into too much more than that. You should definitely check out the listing on the Alamo site, look at the trailer, read some reviews of the film online, and if you don't want to see this movie by that point, then you're not the kind of person who comes to Weird Wednesday anyway, and I don't want to see you there. But if you've ever been to a Weird Wednesday and had a good time, I think The Apple is one of those things where you need to show up.
I've been to two or three Weird Wednesdays back when I worked at home and could do that.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, I can't really call in I'm sorry, I'll be late to work today. I saw the apple, and...
You can't suffer a little for calling sick. I mean, come on.
Yeah, Lars needs to do something for old people like me this, like, weird Sunday afternoon, although that sounds terribly lame.
So, but Lars Nielsen does the programming for Weird Wednesday. Weird Wednesday shows are midnight on Wednesdays.
Which is why I never get to go.
And, yeah, they're usually full of, like, college students who can stay up till 2 a.m. on a, you know, technically a Thursday morning.
And they're free.
And they're free. But, of course, you are encouraged to purchase some lovely Alamo food and or beer and tip your waitstaff handily. So I think that's going to do it for this first here episode of the Slackerwood podcast. What do you think? Yeah.
I think we've covered more about Austin film than you ever experienced in 20 minutes outside of a film festival.
Okay, well, if you would like to, you know, leave a question or a comment, or there's something you think we should be promoting, maybe the film you made in Austin or after you left Austin, you know, come on over to the website, slackerwood.com. Leave us a comment on ye olde comment.
We have a comment form, and I really do read them all.
She reads all of them.
And I love getting ones that are not about, you know, Viagra or something, so please come and say anything. Like, we hated the podcast. Hey, that's fine.
I personally would love comments about Viagra, so you can feel free to leave those as well. All right. I'm Chris Holland.
And I'm Jet Kernion.
And we'll see you next time.